Good morning and welcome to the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee, the Senate's Committee on the Economy. Today is April 6, 2017 and it is 9:10 in the morning. With me this morning is Senator Stevens. Good morning. Senator Meyer, good morning.
Good morning.
And Senator Gardner, good morning.
Good morning.
Senator Hughes has a bill in Senate Finance, so she is not going to be able to join us today. Today we have Senate Bill 62, and the sponsor is here, Senator Wilson, good morning. And his aide, Gary Zepp, good morning.
Good morning.
This is a bill, it's a pretty hefty bill, so we'll have an introduction to the bill today with in some invited testimony, and then we'll be setting the bill aside. And for those listening online and members, this is a bill that would repeal the certificate of need. And if it's an issue that you're not familiar with, I think you soon will get familiar with it. Appreciate that Senator Wilson is going to be walking us through the bill, and I want to just pass it over to you, Senator, and let you go through the bill with us.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair and committee members, for this opportunity to present Senate Bill 62 before you. Before we begin, I just wanted to let me introduce myself. It's David Wilson, Senate District D. I do have a background in this information. My MBA is in healthcare administration. Is that so? I just wanted to give that background that this is a topic that I'm familiar with. I did not work directly with, but more the peripheral of healthcare facilities in this area that I've spent a lot of time studying and researching and as well. I also want to make sure that we all understand that healthcare is a very, very complicated issue in general. And more complicated is probably the healthcare system. And it's probably a little bit more complicated than our own human bodies with that. And so I want to thank those that are here today that are willing to testify for our invited testimony, and those hopefully, given the opportunity later, will be able to give public testimony on this topic. We have heard from many during the research of the Senate Bill 62 on the repeal of certificate of need are sort of unwilling to come forward due to the pressure of some of the larger players involved. We've heard from many that are fearful of losing their hospital privileges. We've had a few folks that are in the building now from the advanced nurse practitioners that came forth that have private practices that say that they are fearful. We've had a couple of private entities they got permission. They say they were going to give expert testimony, but their board decided not to because of repercussions that may have on their contracts with some other entities in the state of Alaska that do have certificate of need. And so with that, it is a very, very powerful subject when we start talking about the repeal of certificate of need, as indicated by probably some of the large players here today. Senate Bill 62 is a certificate of need. That program, this bill, would provide a two-year window before the repeal becomes effective. We've examined the historical and current arguments for certificate of need laws, and we just feel that they do not provide economic justification for depriving customers of the benefits of more free markets within healthcare. And by no means is healthcare a total free market. It has a lot of regulations and rules and governance that should be there for the quality and care for patient safety. But Alaska's certificate of need program poses a substantial threat to the proper performance of healthcare markets and services. So originally, certificate of need was a federal mandate for all states. Congress, the intent behind the enact of CON laws were the Federal Health Planning Resources Development Act of 1974. It was there to cut down on the health care costs of inflation. At the time, reimbursement for those services were based on cost of production or a cost plus system. Providers thus had strong incentives to build and expand their capacity for healthcare facilities during that time. Once, though, the reimbursement system shifted for fee-for-service, the feds repealed CON mandate in 1987, citing the program did not effectively restrain healthcare costs, and since then, 14 states have scrapped their CON certificate of need programs, while the approval or oversight process still remains in various states. And for the purpose of this discussion, I may flip going back and forth to calling it CON or CON, but I'm trying to maintain using acronyms, and we try to refrain this Alaska to certificate of need. So Alaska's certificate of need law was enacted in 1976 in response to sort of the National Healthcare Planning Resources, and that's sort of that federal mandate that included that for that expansion purposes. And this was given on base of need calculation, the rationale of cost of the supply of controlling the cost and trying to reduce the cost of healthcare services. Healthcare services weren't typical economic product because consumers were not generally restrained from their choices, and this information comes directly from the Health and Social Services when we asked sort of an overview of the CON program from them. But the healthcare federal government still repealed the mandate in 87. They also state that that's where the 14 states since then repealed their laws. They give the argument of the persons that favor CON argue that they do not limit healthcare costs, but in favor of the transparent process, allowing the stakeholders input for large projects that are undertaken. Those that favor amending abolishing CON's laws argue they have the opposite effect on healthcare costs while increasing or decreasing limitations and the competitiveness. So currently, the Alaska CON laws requires folks that spend more than $1.5 million construction, remodel, or purchase of equipment or healthcare facility to obtain a certificate of need. Currently, it's staffed by one, as they say, very busy individual in the Office of Department of Law with two civil lawsuits currently going on and with two appeals before the Administrative Office of Appeals. And the other one is before the Superior Court. Their staff recommends the statutes be updated to reflect the current model of healthcare industry, but we've looked into sort of what that would entail, and we're looking at probably a 5 to 10 year process because we're not going to get healthcare providers to really come forth and agree upon this process. But they say the statute should also be amended to limit the ability of the CON laws that those markets and skilled certain nurses facilities that have direct burden increase the state budget. So some states here feature ensure the percent. Some states that have CON laws in their CON and their certificate of need law states a place for charity care. And so some of the arguments you may hear upon that is that to ensure the underserved population is met and that charity care is needed, but Alaska law does not have that within the statutes. And so that's not a, and also the Alaska Pioneer Homes, the veteran homes, private offices, dentists are expressly excluded from the certificate of need program. And tribal facilities also in the state are also excluded from the program, which to my estimate have about 150 plus facilities in the state of Alaska. So we started to review the national history of the certificate of need of the program. We talked a little bit about how in 74 was needed to help come up with the sort of the proposals and try to cap the way that we were having programs based on the current need of programs. Now since the fee-for-service programs are established and kind of sort of repealed that law in 87. This shows a couple of diagrams of what the laws enacted in 74 on page 6 for those following along. 7 shows what happens after the federal folks sort of came through and said, yes, you need to have a certificate of need program. This is 1980. 1990, we start showing some of the folks that said, well, if we're no longer federally mandated, they excluded some of those from certificate of need. Those states are repealed, and 10 years later, we added a couple more states, and then finally, 2017, we have 14 states. Arizona's sort of unknown, and we had a couple of states that have actually repealed the law through the legislative process, but through a governor veto, and that was Virginia. And so the newest state was New Hampshire, who just repealed their law. Okay. So, in our study, research through the certificate of need process, we came across an article upon the National Institute for Healthcare Reform. And this article was published in May of 2011 upon the certificate of need laws versus policy or politics. In the study, they interviewed six states from Connecticut, Georgia, Illinois, Michigan, South Carolina, and Washington, who all have certificate of need statutes. And I'm just going to briefly research, and there's an outline that has sort of the in the end that gives all the references to the material that we are referencing here today. And if you would like, we can provide copies of the actual documents to the committee members if they so wish to have them. Politics and competition. Certificate of need programs tend to influence heavily by politics, relationships, and provider's clout, organizational size, and overall wealth and resources rather than policy objectives, and according to many respondents in the five of the six studies. All but Michigan responded the approval process can be highly subjective, then the certificate of need authorities often interpret regulations and standards quite broadly. And this is a complaint that we hear mostly from a lot of the other hospitals when I started doing my own research here before I took my oath of office. State officials indicate the challenges in the processes are most often brought by providers contesting the approvals of the competitors' applications. And this currently happened in one of the providers' current applications now. We have one that's in Superior Court in the state of Alaska, and that was the Alpine Spine relocation. The Spine Center got permission to move the surgery center to Wasilla under a statutory exemption, but the Matsu Regional objected to this determination and filed a lawsuit, and this is currently in Superior Court in litigation. So currently, our certificate of need laws aren't enforced or regulated by the department, but mostly by the competing agencies, and this is a constant process. To try to get those numbers, we failed to get those from the local providers of how much they actually spend on current litigation. But we can only estimate of that, and I'm not sure if some of the other experts, folks online, would also be able to testify to the amount that our hospitals and other organizations spend to defend their certificate of need or to the processes that they spend to reject the other certificate of needs process. I'm going to be here for a while. The certificate of need process is viewed as an unlevel playing field among others. Smaller community hospitals report the lack of financial resources to go through a contracted certificate of need process. A Georgia respondent noted that large hospitals, which often have ample financial resources and political clout, have also kept hospitals out of the market by tying them up in certificate of need litigation for years. Likewise, a Michigan observant also said the hospitals have significant market share and resources, and the certificate of need processes prevent outsiders from entering the state entirely. This report also talks about hospital associations of the six states that are in here. State Hospital Association respondents advocated maintaining certificate of need programs, noting the associations often act as an unofficial liaison between hospitals and the state to facilitate unsuccessful filing of the application. Despite hospitals' love-to-hate view of the certificate of need regulations, and that's what I found also, that hospitals love to hate this regulation, they concluded the hospitals believe they're better off with the regulations than without them. One hospital association respondent member said hospitals initially had mixed views of their benefits or certificate of needs, but they all banded together to support the process only after realizing it was a valuable tool to block new physician-owned facilities. Some of the physician experiences the study talks about is on the opposite end, that physicians interested in establishing for-profit view of CON programs, they viewed it as overly restrictive, and they supported the repeal of the regulations entirely. This is a complicated and very hard process for entities to go through. Providers sometimes court public officials, municipalities, to get support of their certificate of need, and citing the economic impact of new facilities and services. And I'm sure that some of us here on the committee, I'm not going to speak for everyone, but I know my office and other offices, legislative offices, has also been inundated by folks asking about the processes of some of their certificate of need processes throughout their local communities as well. On the other hand, some respondents pointed out that the often lengthy certificate processes can also arguably impact the quality of negatively by delaying the acquisition of new technology and keeping facilities from having the most advanced and highly potential quality of equipment. With that, we'll, and again, this comes from the National Institute of Healthcare Reform research brief. So some of the benefits, and you know, I'm not going to state here and say that having a certificate of need will lower healthcare costs or higher or raise healthcare costs. There's data on both of those sides of the information stating that some states that have certificate of need laws have high healthcare costs and some have low healthcare costs. Some hospitals and vice versa. And so that's not what this argument that I'm here to give before the committee, Madam Chair. This is more upon more of having more of an open competition and removing the subjectivity out of one or two individuals' clauses. In our research, we've seen hospitals that should have had a certificate of need process go through, and somehow that was waived. I can't explain that, but some of them have been waived. Some other ones have not. And through this process, we've talked with other entities, and they told us some of the loopholes that they go around and get. So you have a physician-owned practice with five physicians. One physician has a separate entity that will buy a piece of equipment for more than $1.5 million. They thus lease it back to the entity under a lesser cost to get around the $1.5 need. This is not right. We should be able to have newer technologies and have that able to just go forth and to provide better quality of care to our to the patient consumers. Some of the benefits in healthcare. Our biggest concern with our federal citizens is us as government officials, we should not lose sight of the basic truth. Market forces improve quality and could have the possibility of lowering healthcare costs. Increased competition in the healthcare market does not make us choose between the obtained benefits of the competition or delivering the higher quality of care. Competition drives innovation and ultimately leads to the delivery of better healthcare. Government intervention cannot undermine the abilities for these markets to deliver that benefit. Healthcare is a very regulated entity. Most entities that would require a certificate of need has to be administered and have to go through some type of regulations or some type of regulatory commission. Most of them go through the Joint Commission, which most folks probably know as JACO, but now I think they just call themselves a Joint Commission, or some other type of regulatory body. There's other items becoming a CMS, a Center for Medicaid and Medicare Services, also have different quality standards that they have to have to start their practices. Competition also brings consumers important innovations in healthcare technologies. For example, health plan demand for lower costs, patient demand for institution-friendly, convenient setting up for surgery care centers can be driven down by the ambulatory surgery centers. So most folks are fearful of the hospitals having loss of their profitability because of their ambulatory surgery centers, which I believe we'll cover here a little shortly. Ambulatory surgery services offers patients more convenient locations, shorter wait times, and lower co-insurance than the hospital's departments. The important success of competition forces in the improving delivery costs for consumers, availability of technology advances such as endoscopic surgery, and advances of the anesthesia agents. Thus, competition as this harnessed new technology has brought to consumers in a lower cost and more convenient setting in ambulatorial care centers. The impact on non-traditional care acute hospitals lead to hospitals responding the competition is delivering more care in a better manner in outpatient setting, both in their own campuses and ambulatory centers which they invested. So some hospital groups have actually to allow their expansion of ambulatory centers have sort of went into business with a couple of local providers with this as well. And so they co-own or co-manage sort of the surgery centers. So the original cost control reasons for having cons no longer apply. Instead, these laws are adopted because of the excessive capital investments, that was sort of the cost plus method of the reimbursements for driving up those healthcare costs. That was a concern, but the patients were not price sensitive. providers engage in medical arms race by unnecessarily expanding their services to offer the most perceived highest quality of services. So the cost of care, some agencies, not surprising, providers say the CON process has negligible effects on the cost. A few respondents noted that the CON actually, the certificate of need actually raises capital projects given the process that they have to go through to apply and then defend their applications. So protecting revenues of the incumbents that currently have certificate of needs do not justify maintaining these laws. Essentially, protecting the incumbent hospitals or other groups that have certificate of need laws should allow tax consumers through the exercise of the market power in order to persuade charitable goal of providing care to less fortunate consumers. And that's for some of those states that had those laws, but we do not have that law of the Charitable Act to give. Certificate of need laws, facilities, and antitrust behavior. I know that we are tight on time today due to other obligations, and I want to make sure that we can cover some of these items. So let me just go through some of my presentation here and see what we can. Down here. Some of the revenues that I do want to touch upon and bring light to attention. I have an article here that talks about in 2010, two hospital groups, HCA and CHS, that own hospitals, have profit margins higher than 25%, and this is in 2010. Right now, I believe one of the hospitals mentioned here has a hospital profitability rate of 24% this year. And this came from Becker's Hospital Review off of a Fairbanks Daily Miners report that talked about some of the higher healthcare capital costs. Both hospital figures are well above the community hospital profit margins. The national average is 5.7 in this report, and the average hospital averaging costs of operations were 13.4%, which is still double the national average. We've heard stories and reports during our research upon how most of our hospitals here are the most profitable of those entities of their chains of operations. So profitability in terms of loss of revenue of care for me is it's not really relevant in terms of justifying their loss of this of revenue. You probably hear about some of the rural hospitals' concerns of this. Most of our rural hospitals are mostly, some of them are tribally managed or tribally owned as well, which obviously do not need a certificate of need, and they're exempt from that as well. Most providers, hospitals, like I said, hospitals fear that the more provider-led surgery centers, if they were to break down, these facilities would take away from the most lucrative outpatient lines of services, which they rely on to cover the losses incurred from providing the required care, as such as their ERs or outpatients. We all know that those are highly overutilized entities, and I don't think any hospital in the state nor the nation actually makes money off providing ER coverage, and they're always subsidized by other services. But let me remind folks on the committee again upon how profitable our hospitals are. With that, I think we'll turn this over to go a little bit more upon sort of the U.S. Department of Justice, Antitrust Division, and Federal Trade Commission's analysis of sort of the Certificate of Need program.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. Just want to briefly cover some of the national information that we've discovered in our research. The U.S. Department of Justice, Antitrust Division, and the Federal Trade Commission's analysis on the Certificate of Need programs goes back into the 70s.
Gary, do you mind introducing yourself for those online? Thank you.
My name is Gary. He's staff to Senator David Wilson. My apologies.
Senator Gardner.
Thank you. So, Gary, are you reading the prepared statement of the Federal Trade Commission that was specifically related to Alaska from, what was it, 2008? That's what you're looking at now? I just want to...
That's part of, through the chair, Senator Gardner. We have a copies of that over on the table.
Right.
I got it. I just want to follow along, make sure that we're on the same document.
Yes, okay. Ma'am. Through the chair again, I'll follow along now with the PowerPoint slide beginning on slide 13. And as I mentioned, the U.S. Department of Justice, Antitrust Division, and Federal Trade Commission have been very vocal proponents of repealing that certificate of need program. The U.S. Department of Justice, Antitrust Division, and the Federal Trade Commission have jointly studied the effects of certificate of need laws across the country. Hearing from 250 panelists has elicited 62 written submissions and generated almost 6,000 pages of transcripts over 2 years. The group also included attorneys and economists that focused on the healthcare markets. Antitrust economists holding doctorates on the studies of markets and their performance with a specialization in healthcare markets. This group has studied markets across the country involving hospitals, physicians, ambulatory surgery centers, standalone radiology programs, medical equipment, pharmaceuticals, and other healthcare products. Through this work, the group understands the competitive forces that drive innovation and contain the cost of healthcare. The goal is to ensure a competitive marketplace in which consumers will have the benefit of high quality, cost-effective healthcare and a wide range of choices. The mission is to preserve and promote competition rather than preserve any particular marketplace rival or group of rivals. The importance of competition and the harm caused by regulatory barriers to entry. Healthcare services are different than other sectors of the economy, but the basic truth should not be lost. Market forces improve the quality and lower the cost of healthcare services. Increased competition in healthcare does not require us to choose between the benefits of competition or the delivery of high-quality healthcare. Certificate of need laws create barriers to beneficial competition. Certificate of need laws are a classic government-erected barrier. When the federal government, enacted certificate of need laws, private insurance reimbursed healthcare expenses predominantly on a cost-plus basis. The desired effect of the cost-plus basis was to incentivize overinvestment. Certificate of need laws were adopted because excessive capital investments, spurred by the then current cost-plus basis method of reimbursement, were driving up healthcare costs. Protecting revenues and incumbents does not justify certificate of need laws. The rationale for keeping the certificate of need laws is that incumbent hospitals should be protected against competition so they can use their profits to cross-subsidize care for the uninsured or underinsured patients. If new competitors were to enter the market, community hospitals cannot continue to exploit their existing market power over consumers. There are other methods to explore for legislators so they won't have to choose between covering the health care for the indigent without impeding the proper function of the healthcare markets. MedPAC found that community hospitals responded to the competition by improving efficiencies, adjusting their prices, and expanding profitable lines of business. And MedPAC is a clinical research organization based in Cincinnati, Ohio. Certificate of need laws impose other costs and may facilitate anti-competitive behavior. Competitors at times go further and enter into agreements not required by certificate of need laws, but nonetheless facilitated by them. Examples include West Virginia Hospital used a threat of objection during a certificate of need process and delayed and increased cost to induce a hospital seeking a certificate of need program not to apply for the certificate of need that would have well served Charleston consumers and provided greater competition for business. Vermont home health agencies entered into territorial market allocations using the protection of certificate of need laws to gain exclusive geographic markets. The U.S. Department of Justice Antitrust Division and the Federal Trade Commission found that Vermont consumers were paying higher prices than consumers where home health agencies competed against each other. The American free market system is built on the premise that open competition and consumer choice maximize consumer welfare, even when complex products and services such as healthcare are involved. The Federal Trade Commission and the Department of Justice play an important role in safeguarding the free market system from any competitive conduct by bringing enforcement actions against parties that violate antitrust and consumer protection laws. And I won't use the acronym, but how is Alaska's Certificate of Need program working today? Is Alaska's Certificate of Need program working effectively to reduce health care costs to consumers within the state? Why are health care costs still on the rise? Alaska's Certificate of Need laws have led health care providers to sell state-of-the-art medical equipment and buy lesser quality-priced medical equipment to remain under the Certificate of Need $1.5 million threshold. Wouldn't these dollars better be served Alaskans if they were invested in health care facilities and services? Alaska's Certificate of Need laws result in territorial disputes and legal costs between health care providers because one health care provider objects to another health care provider's plans to add health care services. Does this improve or provide better quality health care to Alaskans? Pennsylvania health care entities support repealing Virginia's Certificate of Need program. Pennsylvania repealed their Certificate of Need laws, and the Pennsylvania Hospital Association testified at a Virginia legislative hearing where Virginia is trying to repeal their Certificate of Need laws. The Pennsylvania Hospital Association stated, "Reinstating administratively cumbersome and costly process will result in unintended consequences, including stifling innovation in healthcare delivery and hospital settings, and potentially preventing the appropriate availability of services within communities." Also opposed to the Certificate of Need laws is the Pennsylvania Medical Society. They oppose Certificate of Need laws because Certificate of Need laws politicize the healthcare approval process and are not effective at holding down costs. Pennsylvania's experience how a free market has done a better job of ensuring that citizens have access to care, they repealed their Certificate of Need program many years ago.
So again, here are some of the articles and references on this. And in summary, in closing, you know, relaxing regulations will, this regulation of Certificate of Need will increase provider competition, force downward, and can help force downward pressure on costs and enhance patient choice. And choice is important in this. Every healthcare, in terms of whether we're going to close hospitals and have shifts of patients going to these surgery centers, it's already happening now. Most major medical insurers, Premier and Aetna, and a few other smaller entities have sort of developed this travel agency within their healthcare insurance pool, where we practice healthcare tourism. Our governor practiced healthcare tourism in his choice. I prefer those dollars to stay within Alaska and have a little bit more open markets within this. We all know the cost of surgery centers, but can help lower those costs. But it's something that we need to look at in terms of making sure our industry gets our fair share of opportunities of their patient care and providing local patients. We shouldn't have those additional risks of secondary or tertiary infections occurring during the travel of a major operation, knee surgeries or hip surgery. Those services should be happening here locally. So the Certificate of Need ultimately picks who gets to compete within the healthcare sector. Reforming this law means by no means entangles the complexity of healthcare, because we all understand that healthcare is a very, very, very complex issue in our state and nationally. But as lawmakers, we should capitalize on this opportunity to make one of the most highly regulated industries a little less heavy on the red tape and a little bit more patient-friendly. And with that, if you like, Madam Chair, we can go over sexual analysis of this bill.
Thank you, Senator Wilson, and Gary, appreciate the introduction. Are there questions from committee members? And what's the will of the committee as far as going through the sectional?
I had a question.
Oh, Senator Meyer has a question. Senator Meyer?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Senator Wilson, Gary, for that presentation. Just a couple questions. The states that have repealed the CON, are they seeing health care costs go down because of that?
Through the chair, Senator Meyer, yes and no. Some states that have repealed have higher costs and some that have lower costs, and we can get try to have a better analysis of that information, but it's really it's mixed in both.
Okay, and if I may, one more.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So does our CON program have an effect on getting more rehab beds in Anchorage and other communities?
Through the chair, Senator Meyer, that is depending on the type of facilities that it does have. It does play in terms of behavioral health, but in terms of residential facilities, and depending on the size or the equipment involved, if it meets that 1.5, and that is subjective into the interpretation of that law by that individual.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Gardner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I have questions that I'll sort of be looking to answer as the data is presented through this process, not necessarily right this minute, but one is a little bit of a side issue, and that's the lawsuits. And I'm particularly interested in Alaska, not national data. But there was a statement that having certificate of need in place does cause lawsuits between different healthcare provider entities or maybe others, I don't know. The other is data on cost savings or cost increases, specifically in Alaska if it's available. And thirdly, impacts on access to new equipment and technology, and there was some reference to it already, and I know in the broader document that we have in our data, places selling high-quality equipment and buying a less expensive model in order to get in under the CON guidelines and not have to go through that process. So those are some of the questions that come to my mind that I'll be sort of looking for answers to.
Yeah.
Senator Wilson?
If I could, Madam Chair. Yes, we've actually asked the Department of Health and Social Services for some of that data, and they were unable to give us the total cost of that while during our first request. So I took that up to with a little higher, and we were able to get a little bit more of the actual costs and data. We just got this financial note of this bill this week, and we disagree with some of the information that's provided in there, and we did not have an opportunity to provide a little bit more information, and we're hopeful that we can take some, if given the opportunity for the next committee referral and finance, to address some of those financial costs a little bit more in depth as we get a little bit more data for some of those answers.
Senator Gardner.
Thank you. And Madam Chair, I think that it's important to have that information here as much as possible, because it is a policy question too, informed by what the costs are. And I do have one other question, and that is, we have on our desk a report from the Health Capital Consultants, and it has today's dates by Robert James Simasi, and it's marked confidential, and I hope that this gentleman understands this will be up on the website, and it's not confidential once we have it.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I want to thank Gary Zipp and the Senator as well for both talking to me about this earlier. I appreciate that chance to begin to recall this process that we went through a few years ago. And I guess the issue for me is as I think back on it, the concern we had at the time, or concern I had at least, had to do with sort of the unfair competition that the hospitals then would, without the CON, would have to live with from especially clinics that would sort of cherry pick and take off, not deal with anybody who was indigent, not deal with folks who couldn't pay their bills. And I wonder if you sort of address that, because that seemed to be one of the key concerns the last time we dealt with this.
And through the chair, Senator Stevens, you know, this is an issue like any market or driver. There will be those folks that try to go in the market for more profitable services. Again, Alaska is one of the, at the 2008, we were one of four states that the Medicaid rates were higher than the Medicare rates. And so we are a booming red light industry for healthcare. Just because of the way our reimbursement systems have grown over the years, and for those profitable markets to emerge. And, you know, as I said before, some of our industry, our folks, we've all known a few people who are looking to have certain procedures done out of state just because of the cost. I myself am looking to have shoulder surgery out of state, because it's cheaper and it provides, and my insurance will provide for my a companion to have a wonderful shopping spree as I recover comfortably in a room, which is still cheaper or less expensive than having a procedure done here in Alaska. So I, you know, like I said, I don't think that healthcare currently, in terms of driving those costs and markets in Alaska, are really negligible effects in terms of the market. Like I said, some of the hospitals have actually went in business with provider groups that, one, they don't have to do another certificate of need process themselves or expand that need as well. And so it's something that the hospital groups were interested in opening some of those to keep those profits within their own systems. They have that free choice to do that as well. But in terms of competition, since tribal entities do not have to have certificate of need process, they could also open up their own surgery centers themselves within the state currently.
Senator Stevens.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
Any further questions? Thank you very much, Senator Wilson and Gary. I appreciate you being here. We're going to take a brief at ease while we give time for Department of Health and Social Services to have their presentation ready. Thank you. Welcome back to the Senate Labor and Commerce. With us now is John Sherwood, the Deputy Commissioner of Department of Health and Social Services. Welcome. And please feel free to begin your presentation, and we'll ask questions at the end. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is John Sherwood. I'm the Deputy Commissioner of the Department of Health and Social Services. On the phone is Alexandria Hicks, the Certificate of Need Coordinator in our Office of Rate Review up at Anchorage, and she's my lifeline if the questions get too technical. Thank you for the opportunity to give you a brief overview of the Certificate of Need Program, or CON if it's off, as it's often called. So I apologize if I forget and don't say the whole thing. So what is Certificate of Need? I think you heard a fairly good explanation earlier. It's a state review process for health facilities. Requires people to get the certificate before, providers to get the certificate before they can build certain kinds of facilities. It's intended to help ensure a consistent application of resources for development of healthcare, and as we'll describe later, it involves a significant role for public participation in the decisions. So what triggers a requirement for a certificate of need? Really two things. One is what sort of health facility, and up on this on slide three, you'll see the list of health facilities: hospitals, nursing homes, ambulatory surgical centers, diagnostic facilities, residential psychiatric treatment centers, and kidney dialysis. It also has a monetary trigger so that projects have to be equal or above the certificate of need threshold, currently $1.5 million. All nursing facility conversions must apply regardless of the cost. So how providers get engaged in the certificate of need process: they can submit a request for determination whether a certificate of need is necessary or not. These are fairly common. They can submit a certificate of need application if they know that one is required, and these are less common. And there's also a process by which they submit a letter of intent for a concurrent review when an entity wants to compete for a certificate of need with existing applicant. And I'll talk a little bit more about this on the next slide, because that's kind of a special case. The concurrent review process is really intended so that if there are competing proposals, we can align them and get the consideration of them in sync. So once we receive a certificate of need application, we public notice it, that we received it, and other potential applicants have 25 days to submit a letter of intent indicating that they are also going to request a certificate of need. After that, they have 30 days to get their application in, and then we start a concurrent process, which is basically the same process, but we're doing both applications at the same time. And there can be more than two. I mean, I think typically we see two, but there could be multiple applications. So an example of a concurrent review conducted recently is the Providence Alaska Medical Center and Alaska Regional Hospital had concurrent applications for emergency services in the Anchorage area. The certificate of need process has a fee. For activities that are less than $2.5 million, the minimum fee is $2,500, and then it's 0.1% of the estimated cost, up to a maximum fee of $75,000, and that would be for a $75 million project or more. So, how the certificate of need decisions are made is we get these applications. There's generally things, you know, your basic reviews for completeness, that sort of thing. But the staff performs review and analysis, looking at the answers to review questions that are part of the application process, looking at both the general standards for all applications and the specific standards for the types of facilities. Makes a determination of need using set methodologies and also considers public comments gathered in the process. The staff then prepares a written analysis for making a recommendation to the commissioner, and the sort of the three choices are to approve the certificate of need, to not approve the certificate of need, or to approve with specific conditions. And the commissioner makes the final decision for the application. So slide 8 just shows the general review standard, which includes documented need, relationship to community and statewide health plans, stakeholder participation, looking at different alternatives for meeting the needs, impacts to the existing system, and patient access. I think probably the essential hurdle that always needs to be clearly met is the documented need piece. I think earlier comments about subjectivity in terms of things like stakeholder participation, consideration of alternatives depending on the type of the facility, that may be more involved or less involved based on the particular situation. And then there, slide 9 just shows a breakout of what the service-specific review standards are for which kinds of services. So you can look at it, and it's pretty common sense. We have some specific criteria that we would use for hospital labs or emergency departments that we wouldn't use for long-term nursing care or diagnostic imaging. So each, depending on the kind of provider, there are some specific standards that get reviewed. And as we mentioned, there is public participation in the certificate of need process. In some instances, it may really provide the public its only opportunity to comment on a project that it will use and pay for. So when the application is determined complete, we notice that, and the public has 30 days to comment. A meeting is scheduled no sooner than 15 days and no later than 30 days after the notice. As I mentioned earlier, in the case of concurrent review, the public comment period and meetings are scheduled after the competing applications are declared complete. Again, that's just to align the decision-making process. So, looking at the standards for making decisions on a timely basis. We're not trying to rush one decision if it's competing with another application that got in earlier. Allows us to consider all that relevant applications at the same time on the same schedule. And really, I think it provides a certain level of equity to providers by doing that, because one provider could be advantaged by going first or going second otherwise. So slide 11 talks about the sort of the history of certificate of need, and I think Senator Wilson did a fine job of describing that. I would just note that states without certificate of need laws typically use other mechanisms intended to regulate cost and duplication of services, such as moratoria and strict licensing standards. It's not unusual that states might place a moratorium on nursing facilities and then have an exception process, which might feel a lot like certificate of need to the nursing facility, but there are other methods to control costs and duplication of services that are used. So the next bit of history is just to note that in 2005 was the last major change to the certificate of need standard, and we did a number of changes there. We expanded the public notice requirements. We revised some of our methods and standards, implemented the fee, clarified that ambulatory surgical centers didn't need a certificate of need if they just wanted to move locations within a service area and not expand service. And we added residential psychiatric treatment centers. Those are centers largely serve children that are mostly paid by through state funds, either Medicaid or other state funds. So, and slide 13 just shows the recent certificate of need activity. You can look over the last 3 years. The majority of activity, at least in numbers, is the determinations of whether or not you need a certificate of need. And then the actual certificate of need applications each year are relatively small, two in 2014 and 16, and one in 2015. And then appeals, there is an appeal in each of those years. So I think that's probably pretty typical, at least in this economic climate, of the kind of activity we're seeing. I think I wanted to talk just briefly about kind of a specialized aspect of the process, which is looking at the impact on Alaska Medicaid, especially hospitals and nursing homes. Alaska Medicaid accounts for just about a quarter of hospital utilization and about over 80% of nursing home utilization. And I think the last statistic I saw, about half of the nursing homes in the state have about 90% utilization or higher for Medicaid. So, the Medicaid program still reimburses hospitals and nursing homes on a cost basis, reasonable cost by statute. So we do still use cost-based reimbursement for those facilities. So if you are going to add a facility, especially the capital cost of new facilities tends to be higher, so that would result in higher rates for newer facilities. And so the impact of adding facilities to the Medicaid program is always one of the things we take a look at when we look at an application. Slide 15 shows the fiscal impact of some denied or partially denied applications over the last couple of years. You can see part of the concurrent application I referenced earlier, we denied the Alaska Regional Freestanding Emergency Room, and that that would be the projection of, if based on the numbers they provided, what it would cost them the Medicaid program if they built a facility and opened a facility in 2019. Likewise, just recently, we partially denied applications for two nursing facilities, proposed nursing facilities in the Matsu area, and those would be the costs associated with the beds that we denied for each of those applications. So it's diff- difficult to say exactly what we would be spending if we didn't have a certificate of need program. We don't know how much of the proposed applications would still get proposed in that environment, and we also don't know what kind of applications we aren't seeing because people know there's a certificate of need program. So we don't know sort of, you know, how many times people are deciding not to apply because they think the need is already adequately met, and they aren't likely to prevail in an application. So I think just briefly, in operating certificate of need programs, there are some, you know, general considerations that policymakers need to think about. Does the program reflect current healthcare science and technology? Are we looking at the right things? I think some of the things that were added in the last revision really represented a shift in technology when certain kind of technology got more affordable and you started seeing private entities start offering services separate from hospitals. Those services were included in the certificate of need statute. Looking at whether or not the monetary thresholds are appropriate or the dollar amounts we're using still working. And then are the health care facilities subject to certificate of need the most likely to impact the state budget, I think is another consideration, at least at the department we have as we try and operate the program. Slide 17 is just some resources, statutory and regulatory citations, our website, and then a site from National Conference of State Legislatures on Certificate of Need Laws. So that's just provided for your information. And that's really all I had to say. Again, just trying to give you a brief overview, make sure you understand how the process is currently working in Alaska, and I'm happy to answer questions.
Senator Stevens?
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. Maybe a small issue, but one that struck my interest and attention has to do with the loopholes. And if you go back to slide 3, talk about, if I understand this, I'm going to open up some kind of a center, and I can keep the price under $1.5 million. I don't have to get a certificate of need. If it goes over $1.5 million, I've got to get a certificate of need. Yet it appears from testimony we heard earlier that people are cheating the system, and having someone invest in equipment and give it to the organization. Isn't that your responsibility to police this? Why aren't you doing that? What are you doing about that?
Through the chair, Senator Stevens, we certainly attempt to police that. We look at prices that are listed for equipment and try and ascertain if they're a fair market price. We have had and successfully prevailed in at least one case I'm aware of where people did try and bring in a transaction that wasn't an arm's length transaction, and we disallowed the cost and reverted back to a prior cost that was more expensive, and it did actually result in the entity losing their certificate of need, right? I actually apologize. I technically don't know exactly how you describe that legal status when the certificate of need is revoked. But it did result in a revocation. I would admit it's challenging. You know, it's not always easy to see the ownership relationships. They can be sometimes difficult to drill down, but we do look at that. I think we also try and stay abreast as best we can of what fair market prices are, but these are not often frequently traded equipment. So if you're selling, say, used equipment, trying to get the best market value estimate can be challenging. There are some resources to do that. But I think we strive to do it. I mean, we certainly don't turn a blind eye when we see it going on. I
I don't want to, you know, to leave that impression. So, but again, and part of what happens actually in the process is there's kind of industry policing. Competitors will tell us if, in fact, the information being provided, you know, they don't think is accurate and true information in terms of what that kind of pricing should be. So, there are some controls, and we actually, if you look at the numbers right now, we don't have that many applications. We do, and even the requests for determination are still in total a relatively small number. But it's, you know, I think it's one of the challenges of a program in a state like Alaska where there are relatively small numbers. You learn by doing, and we're always trying to learn as we administer this program.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Madam Chair, I appreciate that comment and some assurance there that the department is attempting to keep on top of this. Just to make sure, someone could try and cheat the system, but there's no punishment. If they sort of a gentleman's agreement, they can push it to the extent they can, and either they get the CON or they don't, but there's no punishment for something that appears to me to be illegal.
Through the Chair, Senator Stevens, I don't think there's any specific punishment around anything like unsworn falsification on a CON application. I'd have to do some research to see if we'd ever raise that issue. I haven't seen a case where we've raised that issue. Generally speaking, when we become aware of it, the denial itself is the punishment.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, John. And in the interest of time, I'm now going to go to an individual online, Mr. Thomas Stratman from the Mercatus Center. Mr. Stratman, can you hear us?
Yes, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yes, and please be aware that the committee is adjourning at 10:30 to head to other meetings and a floor session. So if you could provide your testimony, that would be wonderful if you kept it on the shorter side.
I will try to do so. Thank you. Chairman Costello, Vice Chairman Hughes, and distinguished members of the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. My name is Thomas Stratman. I'm a university professor of economics and law at George Mason University and a senior research fellow at the Mercatus Center at George Mason University. Thank you for the opportunity to share my recent work on certificate of need laws as they are applied to healthcare in the last frontier. In four different academic data-driven studies, my co-authors and I examined the impact of certificate of need laws. Using economic measures and health measures, I compared these measures between the 35 states that have CON laws to those states that do not have CON laws. All of these four peer-reviewed studies are included as part of my submitted written testimony. These studies use state-of-the-art statistical methods that are well accepted in social sciences, health sciences, and many other areas that analyze data so that the conclusions are based on apples-to-apples comparisons. That is, I perform the analysis in a way so that states with and without CON laws are comparable. All the data I use are publicly available, so my results can be replicated by anyone who chooses to do so. My findings are consistent, as they are unfortunate. Across the board, CON laws have failed. One, CON harms patients by reducing healthcare quality. Another finding, two, is that CON harms patients by reducing access to healthcare. The third finding, CON harms patients by reducing medical equipment, such as MRI machines and CT scanners that help to diagnose illnesses and thereby prevent premature death. My findings are consistent with the positions of the Federal Trade Commission and the Department of Justice and the both Democratic and Republican administrations. They have argued that CON laws fail to meet their stated goals and that CON laws are harmful to patients. Corn laws are not harmful to patients. Corn laws are harmful to patients because they reduce the availability of medical care and make it difficult for medical providers to offer services, nor are they cost-saving. All of these harmful effects are particularly bad for Alaska because Alaska is geographically distant from the lower 48. In the lower 48, patients can travel across the border to access medical services not provided in their state. For most residents in Alaska, this is cost prohibitive, and they are stuck. They have no way out, and they have to live with the harmful effects of corn. Just some brief background on Certificate of Need. Certificate of Need laws require state agency approval before an already licensed healthcare provider can establish a new healthcare facility or before an already licensed healthcare provider can expand. Corn laws require permission from state regulators to provide medical services or to produce medical equipment. The first state that instituted a corn program was New York in 1964, followed by 25 other states over the next 10 years. In 1974, Congress passed the National Health Planning and Resources Development Act, requiring states to implement corn requirements in order to receive funding through certain federal programs. And in 1986, the federal government repealed the corn mandate, and many states immediately began retiring the corn programs. By 1990, 11 states, including California, Colorado, North Dakota, and Wyoming, have repealed their corn programs. By design, corn laws restrict competition, and in a manner unheard of in any other industry I know. In healthcare, with corn laws, existing hospitals and other medical providers have the opportunity to oppose corn application of a would-be competitor, simply by claiming that there is no need for that additional service. In my view, this is akin to McDonald's having to need to get permission from Burger King to open a restaurant in Alaska. In Alaska, medical providers are required to obtain a government permission slip to compete for 20 medical services. They include, there is a call for adding a new hospital bed. Also, permission is required for new providers to open, for providers to open up a new hospital. In Alaska, also permission is required to purchase MRI machines or CT scanners or PET scanners. And in Alaska, permission is even required to open a neonatal care unit. While there are numerous claims made about corn laws, their primary goals include to ensure adequate supply of healthcare resources, to protect access in rural and underserved communities, to promote higher quality care, to support charity care, and to control costs. So the Certificate of Need laws certainly were well intentioned when they were first introduced in the state. However, the effectiveness of these laws be measured by their outcomes, because even the best intended laws might not lead to the best results. As such, my colleagues and I started a project several years ago to analyze data with a goal to rigorously test whether the expressed goals of Certificate of Need were being achieved. My research looked at several measures of access to medical care in facilities across the state. These measures are the number of hospitals, the number of hospital beds, and the number of ambulatory surgery centers. The data show that the state without corn has more than 30% more hospitals than the state with corn. So for Alaska, this means that in 2011, Alaska had about 25 hospitals. In a comparable state without corn, one finds 35 hospitals. This finding suggests that corn reduces access to medical care, and this is also especially the case in rural areas. Another finding is that states without corn have more beds per capita. Why is this important? Well, this means that patients are less likely to be turned away from hospitals, and that also hospital beds are available closer to the residence of patients. Another finding, without corn, Alaska would have had 25 ambulatory surgery centers instead of the 17 that Alaska currently has. So, and when I do this comparison, it compares Alaska to statistically comparable states without corn for ambulatory surgery centers. So the numbers show that states comparable to Alaska and without corn have 8 additional rural health hospitals. The negative effects of corn on medical supply is not just restricted to the facilities that I just mentioned. It is also, corn also affects medical inputs, such as MRI machines, CT scanners, PET scanners, and similar imaging equipment. This is because there are corns in Alaska that require permission to purchase such imaging equipment. The data show that in Alaska, residents right now have about 6,000 MRI scans. My estimates show that residents in states comparable to Alaska, but without corn, receive about 1/3 more MRI scans, that is 8,000. Similarly, in states without corn, those residents have 30% more CT scans than residents in Alaska. In states without corn laws, hospitals have an incentive to compete to attract patients. However, hospitals cannot compete that well on prices, as most competitors do, because their patients are Medicare, many of their patients are Medicare and Medicaid patients, and the prices hospitals can charge for these patients are pretty much fixed. Therefore, hospitals will compete on different margins, such as quality of medical services. So there is a strong incentive for hospitals in states without corn to compete for patients by providing better quality of medical services. However, this incentive does not exist to the same degree in states that have a corn law, because in these states, hospitals are shielded by law from competition. In contrast to this line of thinking and this reasoning, some proponents of corn claim that it is good to have fewer hospital providers, because when procedures are concentrated on a few hospitals, so the argument then physicians have more experience in performing operations because they have more volume, and higher volume translates into more experience with operating and thus higher quality of medical services. To analyze which of these competing views is correct, I use data on the quality of medical services delivered by hospitals, and these data come from the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. I find corn does not improve the quality of medical care. Thus, another claim is not borne out by the data. However, and very unfortunately, the numbers are much more alarming than this.
Mr. Stratman, we have about 5 minutes remaining in the committee, so I just wanted to let you know so you can choose how to wrap up your comments.
I will wrap it up. So, states without a corn law have lower quality of services as measured by the hospital mortality rate and readmission rate. So, real quick, there are higher mortality rates for surgery patients with serious complications in states with corn laws, and including Alaska. Corn laws have higher pneumonia mortality rates, higher heart failure mortality rates in hospitals and higher heart attack mortality rates. Let me conclude to say that one of the claims of corn proponents is that corn increases charity care, because corn applicants might use the excess profits from reduced competition to subsidize charity care. However, the data do not show any additional services from the poor. The takeaway is that corn laws are bad for Alaska residents. They reduce access to facilities, especially in rural areas. They reduce access to equipment and services like MRIs. And most importantly, corn decreases quality of services and increases mortality rates of residents. Alaska would be better off joining the 15 states that do not have corn laws. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Stratman. And I just want to mention to members that if you have questions, please feel free to get them to my office, and we will distribute them to the presenters today. And we do have a meeting scheduled at 1:30. However, if that is not possible, then I will be making an announcement later today. So with that, the committee is adjourned.